Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Joining us now on the Meyer Supercenter guest line covering the NFL. His name is Ryan Dyrud. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Dyrud, LAFB, part of the Believe Podcast Network. Ryan, my friend, first and foremost, thank you for taking the time to join us. How are you? How's life? How are things out there in sunny LA?
Guys, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Excited to talk some football with you, but you know, can't complain. Things are out here. It's finally in the low 80s. It's been in the high 90s, I feel like, all fall. So it finally feels like L.A. football weather. I know it's not true fall football weather, but 80s in L.A. is fall. Feels great, and excited to get into it.
You know, I know this is kind of strange and a random question here, but what is L.A. weather for football in, like, December and January? Because here, with me working for the Lions, it's always 70 and sunny inside Ford Field. We have a roof over our heads. Now, our neighbors, whether you go east to Pittsburgh or to Cleveland, there's no roof there. You go west to Lambeau Field, to Soldier Field, there's no roof there. So, you know, November, December, January, those are brutal months to try to play football in. What's a home game like for weather-wise in your area that time of year?
I mean, it's beautiful, you know, 60s, low 70s, like, you know, every now and then you'll get like a high 50s game. But what's funny, what's interesting, guys, is at night here, it does get cold. I know people won't believe me or won't believe anyone out here says that, but, you know, a high 30s, low 40s night in LA is a cold night. It's not, you know, I know it's not in the teens or the negatives like it gets out in Detroit, but for out here, that actually is pretty chilly. And the new stadium, SoFi, the way it's built is it has a roof, but it also on the main concourse is fully open. So you get that fresh ocean breeze. And so I was actually at the Rams Chargers preseason game, which was a night primetime game for preseason. And, you know, when that sun goes down, and this was in late August, you know, it still gets a nice chilly breeze in there. So you'll see some windbreakers in December at an LA football game. Not heavy coach, though. You'll be good there.
You know, once I asked you that, I remembered back. I went to the 07 Rose Bowl where I watched USC march all over the University of Michigan. And that was, you know, Rose Bowl. It was that time of year. And I just remember, you know, going out to dinner and having a button down and jeans on. You know, it's kind of like, look, the West Coast, they say it's the best coast. It's definitely the best coast for sports because, I mean, you kick off first thing in the morning. What, 1 o'clock game, 10 a.m. your time? It's perfect. You get football all day. You don't have to stay up for an 8:20 kickoff on NBC for Sunday Night Football or where the Lions and Packers will be for Monday night. That's 5 o'clock. That's perfect time. The Coliseum, USC, they fired their coach. This is a big deal. There's a connection there. You have a list right now. Luke Fickell could be on that list. Matt Campbell might be on that list as well. Who do you think USC should go after in maybe if there is some sort of bidding war for a coach, who would be your favorite selection here?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of good names coming out. Anyone that covers the Trojan or follows the Trojans, we've been talking about this coaching list, it feels like, for 5 years. So Clay Helton's been on the hot seat basically since he was hired and now fired. But the first guy I want to talk about is the actual interim head coach, Dante Williams, who I don't think is getting enough credit, enough love around national media or even local media, to be honest. He was basically named the interim, and then immediately everyone kind of moved on and started looking at big names who would come in and be the head coach next season. But I truly think Dante will have a real legitimate shot to win this job. I don't think USC will do that disservice like they did last go-around where Ed Ogeron, you know, seemingly won the job, loved the players, turned the season around, and then they ended up giving the job to Clay Helton instead. So I don't think they'll make that mistake again. If Dante Williams can turn this thing around, can lead this team to a Rose Bowl, can change the culture, can make the offense a little bit more prolific or a little bit more smash mouth as fans want to see. I know they've shifted to an air raid, but maybe dial that back a little bit and keep the defense to where they should be. I think he'll have a good shot to win it. But if it's not him, my number one choice is Luke Fickell. And what he's done at Cincinnati is obviously, I think, no secret anymore. That school is now planning to join the Big 12, which I know the Big 12 is a mess. But anytime you can move up the ranks and join a Power 5 conference, it speaks highly of what you've done for your program. And Fickell's, you know, an Ohio State guy, the state of Ohio guy. But he was on, you know, Urban Meyer's staff. So Urban Meyer is always a name linked to USC. But with Fickell, you get a guy that runs things like Meyer, has the winning culture like Meyer, but doesn't have the baggage that Meyer has. So I love Luke Fickell. Obviously, there's the connection with now USC AD Mike Bone, who was one that hired Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. The biggest problem with this is a lot of people think that Fickell doesn't want to leave Cincinnati. You know, he's built something great there. The talk of the town, he's an Ohio guy, they're joining a Power 5 conference, the recruiting is going to be that much better, that much easier, the money's going to be, you know, they're saying he's going to get a big extension contract, so he may not want to leave and come to Southern California even though the SC job is considered one of the top five in the country. Now, the other one, and if you want to interject, go right ahead. The other one I'll talk about is Matt Campbell, who I've loved Matt Campbell for a long time. My former co-host and I had talked about him as a potential replacement when the talks were really serious before Mike Bone was hired as the AD. The thought was when Lynn Swann stepped down, that when the new AD came in, Clay Hill would be fired immediately. So everyone was talking, okay, who's going to take over? And that was before Matt Campbell kind of had risen to where he is now. He was on the rise. Anyone that followed college football knew who he was, but he hadn't been the three-time Big Ten coach of the year or whatnot, the accolades he has now. So we were like, this is a name you need to look out for. And now, obviously, we know what he's done at Iowa State. Anytime you make a program like Iowa State relevant, like, you deserve a lot of credit. And you know him well from his time at Toledo, what he was able to do there. High character guy and a guy that just really made a lesser program relevant, which is huge. And imagine what he can do with the talent pool and the recruiting pool here in Los Angeles and with USC. So those are my three guys. I'd be happy with any of them. We can talk, if you want to talk more, we can get more down the list. But those are the three that I've kind of honed in on.
Well, I tell you what, we talked a little bit about Matt Campbell because he lost the Iowa game. He's 0-4 against Iowa, rivalry series there for the Cy-Hawk. And a lot of people think that, with Michigan, would Matt Campbell be a good fit? And there were jokes being made, well, he can't beat his rival, so it would be a good fit. Michigan, Ohio State puns there that I have to deal with as a Michigan fan. You just got to take him on the chin at this point. That's all you can do. But I just think that Ames, you look at their roster and the stars that they're bringing in, stars as in their rankings and for the recruiting, and Ames is not Iowa City. Iowa's always going to have better recruits, higher ranked recruits because the cities are different. I mean, that'd be like comparing, Los Angeles to Fresno, maybe. I'm not really sure, but they're just completely different cities. And, the thought is that maybe they're just kind of tapped out, like the talent wise, they just can't get much better. So it would be very interesting to see him with the resources that USC has to get that brand of football back out there. We have Michigan State traveling to the U this weekend. That'll be tomorrow. And a lot of people very excited. And I'm one of those people that believes that college football is better when USC is involved. Oregon, obviously, they're playing some pretty good football. When you have, Miami, Michigan, Oklahoma, Texas, those blue blood schools, and there's more schools that would be involved than just Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama. Let's shift gears
If I can interject real quick, sorry to cut you off, but here's a good example, I think, that maybe your listeners can tie into. Look at a coach like Chris Peterson, who's also been linked to this USC job. I don't think he leaves the booth after 1 year. I think he's enjoying being a little bit more relaxed. But Chris Peterson, who got his start with Boise State and made them a relevant school out of nowhere, and then he's able to go to Washington in the Pac-12, where he has more resources, more recruiting, and made Washington, a powerhouse in the Pac-12 and pretty much the only Pac-12 team that has made the college football playoff up to this point, or just about. So there's just an example of what a good coach that has built a small program and the relevance can do when they're given the resources elsewhere.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, you move up and you get that opportunity and you can coach and you can recruit. You start getting those funds behind you, and all of a sudden it's a whole new ball game. And Ryan, as we take a look now at the professional game, Ryan Drew joining us right now, and you can find him on the Believe Network podcast. And what was maybe the biggest surprise for you in week one? Because there were some crazy, crazy stories. You had a massive comeback, 17 points scored by the Steelers in the fourth quarter. Joe Burrow and company getting it done in week number one against the Vikings. Kyler Murray running all over the field for the Cardinals. Jameis Winston threw 5 touchdowns and isn't even in the top 20 in yardage after week number one. Like, it's just insane numbers across the board. What stood out the most to you in week one?
Yeah, a lot of great. I mean, what a week one it was. It was just so great to have NFL football back. You mentioned earlier how we have it lucky here in LA. I do an 8:30 a.m. show with someone on the LA Football Network where we, talk about our Rams and Chargers. And then after that, we crack open the breakfast beer and get right into football. So, yeah, it's been great. But, aside from the LA football teams, I won't talk about them right now. But biggest kind of storyline for me would be one that I wasn't as surprised as probably many were, but was Tennessee and just getting their doors blown off by Arizona and how the offense struggled. And I was more shocked at how it wasn't a bigger storyline that their coordinator, Arthur Smith, who basically resurrected Ryan Tannehill's career, because let's be honest, like, Mike Vrabel has nothing to do with the offense there. Like, he's the head coach and a defensive guy. Arthur Smith leaves for the Falcons, and there was really no talk about how this Tennessee Titans offense would look this season. And quite frankly, it did not look good. So that's a definite storyline for this team moving forward. I think they'll get it figured out because they still have too much talent on that roster. But I was really surprised by their performance in a sense that they got blown out that bad, but I wasn't surprised that there would be growing pains. And the other one has to be, you mentioned Jameis Winston, but it has to be the Packers, who, you know, put up a measly 3 points. I don't care if Rodgers didn't do a lick of anything in the offseason. He's still the MVP. You still have that talented roster with Devontae Adams and those running backs, and you put up 3 points. So that's a statement to, you know, Sean Payton and the Saints and how they didn't miss a beat losing Drew Brees, and a statement to now Matt LaFleur and the Packers, who, you know, I think they'll get it figured out, but it's a definitely a big slap in the face to what they've done this offseason, I think.
Ryan Dyrud joining us right now from the Believe Network podcast, and I'm very, very intrigued by this Packers-Lions matchup on Monday night, because Aaron Rodgers' record after getting throttled is pretty impressive. I don't know the exact numbers. I got to look them up real quick while we're on, but to get blown out by 35 points to New Orleans, and you mentioned it right there, didn't do a lick of anything in the offseason. When we look at Aaron Rodgers and how he, I don't want to say behaves, he's a grown man. Behave sounds like, you know, like he's 6 years old or something. But when you look at some of the offseason stuff, hosting Jeopardy, traveling around, doing this, that, and the third, and then you look at a guy like Tom Brady, who's just, you know, eating kale slushies all day and nonstop, like working out in Costa Rica on vacation, like, you know, running up mountains and throwing the football every chance he gets. It just seems like, hey, this is the reason why Tom has as many Super Bowls as he does and why Aaron Rodgers has really struggled during NFC Championship games.
Yeah, it's, you know, absolutely. I think it needs to be talked about. And, you know, I'm full disclosure, I covered the LA team. I live in LA, but I grew up a Broncos fan. And, you know, when the talks really heated up about the Broncos making a run for Rodgers, obviously, you know, you're not going to say no to getting the MVP. But when packages were coming out about, you know, four first round picks plus Bradley Chubb and, you know, high end defensive players, I was one of the few, but I was like, why would you give up that much for a guy that clearly doesn't care about playing that much? He's out, you know, doing the golf tour. You mentioned Jeopardy and all this. Like, here's a guy that has to drop a bat and says, oh, I'm good. You know, I've made enough money. I'll just go into retirement. So, absolutely, I think I would be a little concerned if I'm Packers fans that, you know, this is obviously his last year at Green Bay. I mean, he's not going to play past this year with them. He might not even play in the NFL past this year. But so this is kind of their window to see what they can do. And it was a pretty bad performance in week one.
Yeah, Tim Twentyman of DetroitLions.com. Aaron Rodgers posted a 36.8 rating last week, the fourth worst of his career since becoming a starter. So Tim went back and looked at his stats in games following his previous five performances that were his worst. He's 4-1 in those next games with a combined 117.7 passer rating, 13 touchdowns, one pick, and averaged 316.8 yards per game. That is not an encouraging sign whatsoever if you are a Lions fan looking forward to Monday night. You mentioned, you know, LA guy. I've been very high on the Chargers. Now, part of this, I'll come clean to the audience. Part of this is because of Matthew Stafford joining the Rams. I liked the Chargers a lot last year. I just felt like they had the injury bug, but their defense is very young. They have a shining star that is rising quickly in Justin Herbert. It seems like they have it kind of all put together for the Chargers. The Rams, on the other hand, they are expected to make the playoffs at the bare minimum. Matthew Stafford leaving Detroit where the expectation was like, hey, maybe we'll get to 500. I think that maybe that plays a role in the season a little bit. I don't like how the national media made the Chicago Bears seem like the 85 Bears. They'd never seen Matthew Stafford throw for over 300 yards and three touchdowns. Like, that's all he did in Detroit, but they just couldn't win any football games. They beat the Bears. You got wide receivers running down the field like it's punt coverage. They're wide open. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? So I think a little bit of the narrative has to do like with my sort of vision and how I view things. But I honestly do believe in my heart of hearts that the LA Chargers are the best team in LA.
It's definitely an interesting statement, and you're not alone in it. And I, in my assessment, I still think the Rams are the better team just because of, you know, the remaining players they have, the longevity they have at Sean McVay. You upgrade. I know there's, you know, different opinions on Stafford, but it is an upgrade at the quarterback position for what Sean McVay wants to do. Now, the Chargers are absolutely an up-and-coming team. I have actually both these teams making the playoffs. Because I think the Chargers, what Brandon Staley is building there and what he's doing with the culture there is really exciting. And Justin Herbert, who is probably going to be a top three quarterback here, maybe by the end of this season, or if not, certainly in the next coming years, because that's just how good he is and that's how high his ceiling is. And then you couple that with the, you know, the receivers they have, the running backs they have, and then what Staley's doing with the defense and Derwin James and Joey Bosa. So you're certainly not wrong by any means. You're not alone. I just think right now it's a little too early for that, but I think the ceiling of these teams in the next 5 years certainly is trending where the Chargers could take over that claim here in Los Angeles for sure.
At everything out in the West right now, the AFC West is loaded. You know, we saw what the Oakland Raiders were able to do in an overtime thriller beating the Baltimore Ravens. You know, we saw what the, you know, what the Cardinals were able to do over in the NFC side of things. The Chargers picked up a victory. The Rams picked up a victory. It was like, hey, these teams out West are no joke. San Francisco and Detroit, yeah, they survived a comeback that I thought for sure. Like, I really did. I thought that this was going to happen. I'm like, there's no way Detroit comes back. There's no way we can do this. And all of a sudden, points on the board, points on the board. The Seahawks throttle the Colts in Indy. The Chiefs are, well, they're always the Chiefs, and they took out a Browns team that I'm very high on as well this year. It's like every team in the West was a winner, and that's really, really surprising.
Yeah, well, and the Broncos look like they have a quarterback.
Yeah, the Broncos. Look at the Broncos beat the G-Men 27. Yeah, they made the New York Giants look like a peewee team.
Yeah, and Teddy Bridgewater was like the number one rated quarterback of the week when it comes to just straight QBR. So, yeah, it's loaded out in the West, man. And, you know, I predicted that all four teams of the NFC West have the potential. I didn't say it with 100% brevity, but I thought they had the potential to all four make the playoffs with three wild cards now. And in the AFC West, I think we'll see, you know, it seems like every year we see the Raiders kind of taper off. We'll see if that trend changes. But I think you have the Chiefs at the top, and the Broncos and Chargers are neck and neck for that wild card spot. So a lot of excitement out here out West, a lot of good football. And whoever makes it out of their division, it's going to be really hard to beat in the playoffs, because when you go through those talented teams, you know, twice a year, it makes the rest of the league look a little lesser, in at least in that scope of it.
Ryan Dyrud, last one here for you. Outside of the week one finishes, and maybe going into the season, what was one team that you were looking forward to watching the most? Maybe like a surprise team that was on your radar that you're like, hey, this team might be a little bit better than what people think.
Well, I feel like every year I'm excited to watch the Vikings, and every year they let me down. Not that I'm a fan by any means, but I like what they
should be better
there in the offseason. Yeah, they should be better, right? Like on paper, like they're a solid team. Mike Zimmer's been known to be great defensively. You know, they have Clint Kubiak, you know, Coach Gary Kubiak's son now on the offensive staff. I don't think Kirk Cousins is like a top five quarterback, but I think he gets not enough respect. But every year it seems like, you know, they let me down, and I come out in the offseason like, watch out, this is like your dark horse NFC team to maybe make some noise in the playoffs, and they end up going, you know, 6-10 or 7-9, or now obviously there's a 17th game, and of course this year they lose the opener in the overtime to Cincinnati. So I don't know if they're one I want to keep riding behind, but they're one that I always find interesting. They got a lot of UCLA players on that defense that I love following. And, you know, now they have a couple SC guys too. So I try to follow all of our LA guys all over. So I don't know if that's a great answer for you, but the Vikings seem to always be a team I kind of been excited for, and they seem to always let me down.
He is Ryan Dyrud, founder of the LA Football Network. You can find his work at the Believe Podcast Network. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Dyrud, LAFB. Ryan, my friend, thank you so much for the time today. We greatly appreciate it. It was a pleasure having you on.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It was a blast, and best of luck, and enjoy week two. Hopefully we'll talk soon.